Award-winning journalists. New York Times bestsellers. No topic out of bounds. No opinions left unsaid. An institution for sports talk and information. This is The Sports Reporters. Here's Mike Lupica and Mitch Albom.
I'm Mike Lupica, the New York Daily News and MLB.com.
And I'm Mitch Albom of the Detroit Free Press, and welcome to this edition of The Sports Reporters Podcast, the podcast incarnation of the long-running TV show on Sunday mornings on ESPN. Frequently there, a trio, and normally here a trio too, but on occasion a duo. And I think Mike and I have enough years on this program between podcast and TV to actually count for a third person. We take some of our years, put them over in another chair, and there's a third person there. So we'll handle the duties today. We do this every Monday and Thursday, and welcome to this one. Monday's always fun during football season because there's so much that goes on over the weekend that you cannot predict. And boy, college football threw us another bowling ball worth of conversation, particularly on two storied programs that are now officially out of the playoff run. That would be the Alabama Crimson Tide and the Michigan Wolverines. The Wolverines were hoping that maybe the 50-year anniversary of Bo Schembechler upsetting Woody Hayes' magnificent team in 1969 would have some magic. It didn't work.
I'm sorry.
That part didn't work. And a penalty on a somewhat trick punt play left the normally unflappable Nick Saban flappable and out of the playoff picture. Mike, where do you want to begin on
Let's
this?
Let's start with your game, Mitch. I listened to our friend Gus Johnson call this the greatest rivalry in sports, and I'm thinking, oh, okay, maybe 20 years ago it still was. Maybe when Bo and Woody were there it was. Maybe even when Lloyd Carr was coaching Michigan it was. But not lately. Mitch, I don't know where to start. You know, we've talked about Harbaugh's inability to get a true star quarterback for some time. And I was thinking this the other day. Mitch, in the last few years, if you count Joe Burrow, who was at Ohio State has had four quarterbacks better than anybody that Harbaugh has. They have now scored 118 points. Wait, Mitch, let me say that again. 118 points in the last two Michigan-Ohio State games. And I'm sorry, I know it's always tough for a coach, especially after a rivalry game, to have to go meet the media. But Harbaugh was in no position to be snippy on Saturday. You can question me, but not insult me. Well, no, all they were doing is asking a fair question, because you know you've been saying this all along. If not now for Michigan, when? And Mitch, not only did I think the sides actually looked even in the first half, all of the self-inflicted wounds for Michigan. A fumbled snap where Patterson took his eye off the ball, and offsides on a punt. Mitch, a punt they weren't even trying to block. And you know, after that penalty, it was inevitable as the tide. What happens? The Fields hits a deep ball for Ohio State, and Michigan in the second half just got rolled.
Well, okay, so you've unpacked a lot there. Let's begin, though, in pointing out that while Michigan can't catch Ohio State, I don't believe anybody's going to catch Ohio State this year. And that's important to point out. This isn't just some rivalry that exists between two states that abut each other in the middle of the Midwest. Ohio State's the best team in the country, in my view. I said that before this game. I've been saying it for weeks. They deserve the number one ranking. They are strong on both sides of the ball. They can be unstoppable at times. And I think they're going to win the national championship. So if that's the case, then it's not just that Michigan can't beat its rival, Ohio State. It's that Michigan can't beat the best team in the country. Well, neither can anybody else. So,
but they're the best team this year. What about the other 4 years Harbaugh has been there?
Well, they've been pretty damn good those years too, and they've been in the playoff hunt during those years too, and Michigan has not. Now, to bring it back down to the rivalry, there is a serious gap between the players that they recruit, Mike. That's obvious. I thought one of those little subtle moments of that game that told you a lot about it was when Justin Fields had to leave the game because of a knee injury. And suddenly there was hope in Michigan Stadium. I was there with the 110,000 people, and you could feel that, wait, we're losing by, you know, 15, 20. But what if their starting quarterback is now officially out of the game? This could turn. Who knows? And we don't even know the backup. Isn't this supposed to be their one Achilles heel, that they're really not deep at quarterback for the first time? You remember that year a couple years ago where they were on their third string quarterback and they still went?
Yep.
This wasn't supposed to be that year. So they bring in the backup, whose name escapes me even now. And not only do they not falter, but they kind of move downfield. And then Fields comes back in with a knee brace on. And on the first play with a knee brace, rolls out to his left, buys himself time, throws a dart for a touchdown. That tells you the quality of athlete, the level of depth that Ohio State has that Michigan does not have. Ohio State got a transfer quarterback. Remember, this was a cobbled together team, Mike. When you've got to rely on a fourth or fifth year transfer quarterback, you're rolling a very big dice in a college football
program. But Mitch, stop right there for a second. A cobbled together team in the fifth year of the Harbaugh program. And when you say the talent gap is big, what has prevented Harbaugh from recruiting with them? And we'll get to Auburn, Alabama in a second. And I don't mean to cut you off and you take as much time as you need, okay? There's a talent gap between Alabama and Auburn too. But Gus Malzahn's team went in and beat an Alabama team that was still thought it was contending for the national championship on Saturday in their rivalry game. Yep. So despite the talent gap, Auburn managed to find a way to get it done.
That's right. Listen, if it's coming across like a defense, you're misreading me. I'm not defending Michigan. I'm pointing out that there is a gap in the level of talent on the two teams. There's a gap certainly in the depth of talent. So if you get a player injured, the guy replacing him is nowhere near as close. I mean, Ohio State just recruits. They're like Alabama of the North. You know, they got the guy behind is as good as the guy ahead, and they're three deep, and they're still better than most teams in the country. But where Michigan fell apart here, and we've been living with this here for a year, Mike, is after last year's blowout where they lost by 23 points, and it was 62-something, Don Brown, the defensive coordinator, went on this thing about, well, that will never happen again. You know, we are going to spend the next year making sure this doesn't happen again. And what happens? They lose by 29. They lose by 29. That is the story right there. Their offense wasn't the biggest problem. I mean, their offense scored, you know, on a team like Ohio State to score 27 points, that's a lot. But the defense was insane. I mean, they could not stop anything. There's some ridiculous number that they, I think against all the other teams, Michigan averages 16 points given up, and against Ohio State, it's something like 40 plus. So they cannot get it done against this particular team. And so this is going to lead, let's speed up the conversation. The conversation now is, so what does Michigan do? Fire Harbaugh. You know, that's the question. Should they fire Harbaugh? And I say, okay, if you want to fire Harbaugh, tell me who you're going to get that's going to guarantee they're going to beat Ohio State. And I will say you should fire Jim Harbaugh.
Urban Meyer.
Yeah, there's one. Okay, now you know the impossibility
Nick Saban.
Of that. There's two. Also never coming back to this state. After that,
I'm trying to help you here. I'm trying to reach out here in this low period for Michigan football. I'm trying to help you.
Yeah, what can I mean, Jim Harbaugh has, in his defense, before he got here, in the 7 years prior to him getting here, Michigan was 46-42, barely over a 500 team. Since he's been there, he's already won more games in five seasons than they won in seven. He's 47-17. It's not a Nick Saban record, but it's a pretty damn good record, and they've improved, and they'll probably win a bowl game, and they'll hang another 10-win season up on the wall. But 10-3 doesn't get anybody excited in college football land. And, you know, okay, bring in a new guy. The thing that, Mike, the elephant in the room is that this was Ryan Day. Who? Yeah. Exactly. Ryan Day. Nobody heard of this guy a year ago. And he has now put together an Ohio State team that you could argue was better than last year's Ohio State team under Urban Meyer. So the question is he still being blessed you know, the Barry Switzer, Steve Mariucci, you know, the team you inherit from the regime before. And in 3 or 4 years, when he loses the recruits that Urban Meyer got, when some of his coaches get hired away by other teams, and it's really, really him and not him, you know, with the sort of continued shadow of Urban Meyer, do they fall back a little bit? That's probably the only hope that Michigan has.
Mitch, would you like to know what Ohio State has averaged in the 5 years that Jim Harbaugh has been the Michigan football coach? They have averaged 44 points per game. 44 points per game. Okay. So we can talk about quarterbacks. They get beat on both sides of the ball. And I keep asking this. And I thought Michigan had a chance, and I still thought they had a chance despite the way the roof started to cave in on at the end of the first half. Okay. If not now, when? You're right. Ryan Day came in and replaced Urban, and Ohio State beats him just as badly this year as they did last year. They just scored 6 fewer points. And I'm going to tell you this, and I believe this is going to happen. And it might not happen this year, but it's going to happen. The first time Jim Harbaugh has a chance to grab a head coaching job in the NFL, I can't guarantee anything. There are no guarantees in sports. I believe he's going to grab it.
Yeah, I don't hold with that. I don't. I just, knowing him, I don't see that happening. That's quitting, and that's not his style. Very happy in Ann Arbor. He's from this. You know, there's still a large group of people supporting him, maybe because they know that who else are you going to get? And it's one of those things you have to ride out. You know, Ohio State went through a period like this as well. Cooper, Bruce, you know, they had good records against everybody else and couldn't beat Michigan. So the 10-year war that everybody, and let's face it, that's what this thing is based on, that the what you said Gus mentioned on the show and all the talk about the greatest rivalry. It was 10 years between Bo Schembechler and Woody Hayes, in which they went 5-5.
1,000 years ago.
And that's a rivalry. Mitch,
Jim Tressel was 8-1 against Michigan.
Right.
Jim
They're 15 of 16. 15 of the last 16. That's not a rivalry. It's a chase. It's rivalry in history only, and people are hearkening back
to
a 10-year
period. You got to tell me what's going to happen is going to change. Again, I'll go back to what I began this conversation by saying. Ohio State's had 4 quarterbacks, 4, on their campus in like the last 4 years, better than anybody Jim Harbaugh has brought to Ann Arbor.
Yep. Well, and that you have just pointed out the thing that has mystified people here. Jim Harbaugh was supposed to be the quarterback whisperer. You know, he was supposed to be from Andrew Luck and Stanford and other and the NFL, Kaepernick and other. You know, he was supposed to be the guy who could get any star quarterback to come to this school. And in the 5 years, he basically, his best quarterback has been a transfer from Missouri. That doesn't hold with the magic that he's supposed to bring to recruiting. And he's got a couple quarterbacks on the roster now coming in next year who are young, who are supposedly talented, but they're not bringing with them the 5-star glow that other schools are getting. And we'll see what happens with Ohio State and who's going to take over there. But if you're asking me what's going to change, I'm going to tell you that the only thing that basically is going to change is that they're going to hope that Ohio State somehow comes back to the pack. And that's a pretty dim hope, yeah, considering how good that program is.
Okay, now let's shift to the other game, because Mitch, I've been tweeting about this for a couple of weeks and talking about this on this podcast. In the last 3 big games that Nick Saban's Alabama has played, the championship game against Clemson last year, the LSU game at home this year, and the Iron Bowl, they have given up 40, 46, and 48. Start there. They don't stop anybody. And Matt, I felt bad for Mac Jones on Saturday because the kid had a great game, except
yeah,
the two interceptions were pick
sixes.
Difference
in the game.
And I sometimes think, my math and science will be off here. I sometimes think, if you give up one pick six in a game, you're probably going to lose. Mitch, it's for everything that happened to Alabama, And Auburn showed you how good they are, and even as a 3-loss team, What a great college football game that was. What a great game that was to watch on Saturday.
That was way more fun to watch than the one I was sitting through.
Yeah.
And it felt like a real rivalry because it felt like, despite the fact that Alabama had the better record, you never believed going in there that that was going to be a cakewalk. Now, we have to say, you can't just dismiss the Mac Jones thing. If Tua is playing and they play the same game, they win. I mean, you know, I don't
except Tua threw big picks against LSU, and he threw big picks against Clemson. Mitch, it's been the one flaw for Tua lately, and he has thrown the ball to the other team. So, in a lot of ways, to me, I was watching a Tua-like performance.
Well, Alabama actually outgained them by, you know, like 160 yards. Najee Harris ran for like almost 150 yards. They were doing a lot of things right, and you would have to think that if Tua is in the game, his legs and his threat changes the way that they're defended as well, that Mac Jones isn't quite that player. But those two pick sixes, you can't just dismiss them. I mean, you know, that's 14 points, and it's more than the difference in the game. They're still in it. Until that final penalty on that weird play, which I'm still trying to figure out if that's a violation of the rule.
I don't think it was. I think he got outfoxed by Gus Malzahn. Yeah. I do. Yeah. I've looked at the play. My youngest son knows the rule book better than most of the guys calling the game. And I said, "Did they do anything illegal there?" And he said, "Dad, he just put the quarterback over there and the punter over there."
Right.
And when Saban realized what was happening, it was too late. And this idea, well, we should have gotten more time. Why?
Get extra time because the other team is trying to confuse you?
Yeah.
I don't think that's an actual rule. Technically, the rule is about deception, and that's where you sort of get into it. No tactic associated. This is rule 9/2/2/B if you're looking this up college rules. No tactic associated with substitutes or the substitution process may be used to confuse opponents. But if you're confused, is that because you're confused, or is that because they confused you?
It wasn't the Auburn substitution. It was the Auburn alignment.
That's
on the field.
That's correct. Exactly. And I think that rule is basically you can't hide a player on the sideline, and then sneak him in or say he was actually technically there. If you want to put your punter as your wide receiver, that's your business, you know?
I thought it was pretty creative. Yeah. You know, we see all these games every Saturday, and then every once in a while, you see something new, Mitch, and we did in the biggest moment of the game for Alabama on Saturday.
Yeah, but don't you think in the large picture, Mike, they actually did everybody a favor? Do you think a Mac Jones-led Alabama team is the fourth, third, second, or first best team?
No,
in the country?
They were going to have a hard time keeping a one-loss Alabama team out. So anyway,
right. They're
out. Okay, and we can transition a little bit before we get to pro football because a lot happened in pro football. Okay. I think now if LSU wins the SEC championship game, then it's going to come down to Utah or Oklahoma, don't you? I mean, I think
if Oklahoma
wins the game.
Because they have to play Georgia, is that why?
Yeah. And
so they beat Georgia. You're assuming they beat Georgia.
If Georgia wins, Mitch, LSU's still going to be in. If Ohio State loses to Wisconsin, they're still going to be in.
Right. It's in a certain way. And maybe this is an SEC bias coming out because I've just watched when periodically they take a team from the West and it creeps into this thing and then they get, you know, they just don't belong. And really, going back to bowl games when most of that stuff happened. But I almost am rooting for Georgia to beat LSU so that we keep this with the teams that we have. I do believe that Clemson, Georgia, LSU, and Ohio State are the teams that belong in this playoff this year. And things could happen that could bolt that out. Oklahoma somehow could sneak in there.
I love Oklahoma. You know, we both love the Jalen Hurts story.
Yep.
We both.
Wouldn't it be something if Jalen Hurts was playing and Tua wasn't?
And here's the other thing. Again, Mitch, we've talked about this over the past few weeks. I mean, imagine if Oklahoma ends up not being in the tournament because a kid recovered an onside kick, half a yard too soon at the end of the Kansas State game? Because you know, if they get the ball back, they're going to score again against Kansas State was in a free fall by then. Right. So I think they've got a great chance still. And then the team that if it wins, okay, if and Utah, Oregon to me is a toss up game. I mean, the idea that Utah is just automatically going to beat Oregon is crazy. I won't be surprised if Oregon wins, but Utah, if they do win that game, Mitch, they may end up this year's team with its nose pressed against the pet store window on the outside looking right. in.
But I'm going to return and we can close out on this evaluation. Why Ohio State to me is head and shoulders out in front. I know LSU is impressive and they're fun to watch. And they have a nice win on the resume. But look at what Ohio State is in the midst of doing. And I believe that they're going to finish it off next Saturday in the Big Ten Championship. Beat Penn State 28-17 when Penn State was a pretty damn good team. Beat Michigan by a wallop 56-27. And now it's going to play Wisconsin, who they already beat when Wisconsin was number 13 in the country, 38-7. They have basically overpowered everybody. When you glance through their sheet, the closest anybody came to them was 28-17 at Penn State. An 11-point win is the closest that anyone has ever been within sniffing distance of Ohio State. And if they beat number 8, number 13, number 12 in three consecutive weeks, I know that the Big Ten is not the SEC. And this is where you always get into this stuff. Well, okay, so you beat them. But these are nationally ranked teams. These aren't just high-ranked Big Ten teams. I just think they're head and shoulders in terms of proof above the other teams and deserve to, going in, get that number one seed.
And by the way, before we do get to pro football, what the hell was Dabo talking about the other day? Dabo cannot play the unbeaten, defending national champion, nobody respects us card. Just can't do it. Mitch, here's the quote. We win against the team, South Carolina, that beat Georgia, and it's, how do we get Clemson out? It's the dadgummest thing. And later he said, we got to go, he's being funny there, we got to go 30-0. We ain't got no choice because we don't play nobody. And Mitch, I'll just leave you with this. Ryan keeps saying this. You know what Dabo and Clemson are really saying? Come to Papa. When right. the tournament starts, right. just come to Papa, because I'm watching Trevor Lawrence now, and Trevor Lawrence once again looks like the kid that we thought was the best quarterback in the world. Before we go to pro right. football, let me remind you that we are happy now to be sponsored by our friends from Keeps. Did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35. The good news, with today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss. If you're ready to take action, a doctor can get the right Keeps plan for you. Keeps has revolutionized the way men are treated for hair loss. Say goodbye to the inconvenient doctor office visits. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get medication delivered to your home. No more waiting rooms and no more pharmacy checkout lines. Get doctor attention and discreet drug delivery, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Prevention is the key. Keeps treatments really work. They are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save, so act fast. Go to keeps.com/reporters to receive your first month of treatment free. That's KEEPS.com/reporters. All right, Mr. Album, let's start with the last game we saw last night. Nothing the Patriots did, and the only qualifier is they do have about 8 guys sick. Nothing the Patriots did alleviated any of the doubts that people have about the passing offense of the New England Patriots. And Mitch, let me start by asking you this. Do you think the NFL is going to slow walk the Antonio Brown investigation so they don't even have to deal with the possibility that there might still be a light on in the window for touchdown Tom Brady and his brief friend, Antonio Brown?
I don't think that's going to save him anyhow.
But do you think it's a possibility?
No. That's more conspiracy theory than I'm willing to sign on to on a Monday morning.
Not a conspiracy theory. All I'm saying is, you know how slow the NFL is in adjudicating these things, okay? Yeah. And my feeling is they just don't want to deal with it. Absent, right.
If Antonio Brown got clearance today to play for the New England Patriots, he would make a difference for
them?
There
are stories out there that the players on the team are extremely receptive to this. It would only come down to one vote, because you know how ruthless Belichick is. He'd do it, okay? It would come down to one vote, and it would be the owner of the team who, and maybe this is the wrong year for him to be moralizing about anybody.
Yeah. Well, that said, we saw a game yesterday where, look, I wasn't shocked that Houston beat them. Houston is a surge and pullback team. They've had, you know, that's why, in their four losses, you've been surprised a lot of the times that they lost those
games. They're good.
And in their eight wins, you go, wow, they're good. But they should be, when they look as good as they look, you wonder why they're 8-4 and not 10-2. But the Patriots, this was, Brady was one pass away. One incompletion away from throwing 50% for the night, which is just, you never see that number on Tom Brady. It was 24 of 47. You never see that kind of lack of production. That interception was the reason I'm sure he was screaming on the sidelines, another thing you don't frequently see, was probably a poor route execution. He was sacked three times, and we've all watched in Tom Brady's long, illustrious career, the only time that you beat him is when you fluster him, is when you pressure him and you sack him and you flush him out of the pocket. He was hit 12 times, sacked three times. He still finishes.
He's got one receiver. I don't know why they don't double team Edelman on every single play.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm surprised that Sanu has not been a better pickup for them. Quite frankly, I thought that was going to lift them up. Their running game can't apparently just rely on Sony Michel, and their defense. And Mike, this is, you know, we go back and talk about our program. We spent a lot of time in the first 6 weeks of the season saying this amazing, best ever Patriots defense that's never been assembled before is beating up on a bunch of clowns. And when they actually have to start playing tough teams, it's going to come back down to earth. And that's exactly what's happened here. I mean, you don't get to play Miami, the old Miami. Now the new Miami is apparently pretty good. The old Miami, you don't get to play them every single week. And that's, you know, the way the schedule has laid out for them. Now, having said all this, the Patriots are 10-2.
But a lot of teams
in the league like to be 10-2.
I got a big but, though, because of this loss.
I've seen you, Mike. Your butt's not that big.
I've got to say that right now, and I always love, you know, we never really say this here, but the season ended now. It goes to Baltimore now. They are now tied with the Ravens. The Ravens have a win over them. So for now, the championship game would not be in Foxborough. That's a very big deal. And the other very big deal last night, Mitch, and, you know, Dabo always said, anybody who passes on Deshaun Watson is passing on Michael Jordan. He had one of his Michael Jordan nights last night. Yeah. I mean, talk about a kid who embraced the whole primetimeness of last night. Deshaun Watson, I'll just go across, 18 for 25, 234, three touchdowns, no interceptions.
And a catch.
Catch.
One of the weirdest plays I've ever seen.
QBR at 78.7, rating 140.7. The other guy, QBR 27.2, rating 85.9. I will never write off Tom Brady. But, Mitch, do you not feel that we'll use a golf analogy. He is heading up the 17th fairway, that this might be it for him.
There's a time shift going on here. The Patriots don't exist in a vacuum. They can't just try to live up to their own excellence and then assume that as long as we do that, we're going to win. Because other teams are getting better and in their own way.
And knowing how to defend them when they can't throw to anybody except one guy.
That's right. And when they don't have an elusive quarterback. And when you look at just eye test, Mike, when you watch the Baltimore Ravens play football these weeks, and then you watch the New England Patriots play football this week, one looks like they're having a blast, and the other looks like they're just trying to hang on. And eventually, I think that grip slips. Now, I don't know if that goes to the AFC Championship game, if that's where it happens. I don't know if it happens early. It wouldn't surprise me if the Patriots got surprised this year early on. They've got two tough games left. One that we saw coming and the other that we didn't at the beginning of the season. They've got the Chiefs coming up.
Yeah.
And that's a big game. And we'll see if they can right themselves. That's at home in New England. And they play better. Obviously, they lost on the road yesterday. And that was not as close as 28-22. If you're just waking up and reading the score and say, well, they lost to Houston 28-22. It wasn't a 28-22 game. Those touchdowns were late. They were beaten soundly on the road. Now they go home and they play the Chiefs. And then they've got the Bills in 2 weeks. And Buffalo has quietly become this real strong force, 9-3. And they'll be, you know, for the first time, be playing an important game within their own division. Again, that's in New England. The other two games have got the Bengals and the Dolphins finishing the year pretty much the way that they started it. So let's say they lose one of those. All right. And they end up being, you know, 13-3. The other teams have to, Baltimore has to hold on and continue doing what they're doing all the way through.
Would you like to hear their schedule? Guess who they play next week?
I haven't had it in
front of them. At Buffalo. Big game. Right. Then the Jets at home, then at Cleveland, and you know who knows what Browns team will show up, okay? Right. And then they finish their season at home against
Steelers.
A desperate Steelers team, which, yep, by the way, and I'll say this again, Mike Tomlin's done the best coaching. He's on his third string quarterback, and Mike Tomlin's done the best coaching job of his life, and this is a guy who's won a couple Super Bowls. Okay. Schedule-wise, Mitch, you got to give the edge to the Ravens, except guess what? If the Bills beat the Ravens at home, which they're capable of doing, and the Patriots find a way to get by the Chiefs, then home field has reverted back to the Patriots.
Now, this is probably going to go down to the last week. And, you know, they're playing, the Ravens are playing the Bills in Buffalo, not whereas the Patriots get them at home. So the Bills are going to have a chance to prove if they're for real, too, or they could be done by the time we blink and we get to the end of December, if they drop their games to Baltimore and to New England. So we'll find out what they're about. But look, everybody is waiting for New England to come back to the pack, and I think it's pretty apparent that they are. I would not always put this on these images of Tom Brady, you know, down on his knees in the backfield and his Brady losing. He doesn't have the tools. You give Brady better running backs, better receivers. No one's expecting him to run the 109.1. You know, that's not what he had a play yesterday where he escaped and ran. Looked like he was running in mud, but he escaped and ran. And everyone, they were, look at his athleticism. Look at it for a guy who's in his 40s. You're not counting on him to make those plays. You're counting on him to throw the ball well. And if his receivers are as tightly coached as they have been in the past, I don't see any velocity coming off of his passes. Do you? I don't see accuracy.
No, no.
I see a team that is just not offensively as good as it should be, and they don't have the talent. And that's, to me, is more alarming than something that can be fixed, because you can't just go out and get talent in mid-December.
I will read you something. We used to have him on the Sports Report. There's a very talented young man named Ben Bolin, who's the pro football columnist for the Boston Globe. Immediate thoughts after the Patriots 28-22 loss to the Texans Sunday night. Bill Belichick and the Patriots front office, well, he is the Patriots front office, committed roster malpractice this year by not putting more talent around Tom Brady. The offense has struggled all season, and the point was hammered home Sunday night, despite the final score and the Patriots' yardage shoulder. The Patriots were basically at full strength against the Texans, with Mohamed Sanu and Philip Dorsett back at receiver and Isaiah Wynn blocking at left tackle, yet they couldn't generate any offense until the game was out of hand in the fourth quarter. And roster malpractice. And you know who's as angry as about that as anybody? Tom Brady. And you could see it in his body language. You can hear it in his voice after these games. And he is pissed that he doesn't have at least, Mitch, one more. And I like Sanu. Sanu's a good player. Okay. One more threat down the field on offense. And man, oh man, do they miss Gronk or do they miss Gronk?
Yeah, well, that's the elephant or whatever animal Gronk reminds you of in the room. That tight end option, there's no there's no accounting for that. And he doesn't really have that now. I mean, I don't care who they have playing tight end. You could take three of those guys. They're not going to equal what Gronk offered, both in terms of options, bailouts, third looks, and blocking, you know, which was responsible for a lot of the other receivers getting to do what they did, or running backs getting to do what they did, or even time for Tom Brady. So they truly, truly miss him. I want to jump to that Pittsburgh game because you mentioned it a little bit. We're in the AFC, and I think I'm on board with you when we're talking about what Mike Tomlin has done there.
Oh,
okay, listen, I just pulled this off the NFL.com website. Ben Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, Juju Smith-Schuster, James Conner, Maurice Pouncey, and Artie Burns. Okay, Marquise Pouncey, sorry. That's a team. that's a Pro Bowl team. Yeah. And they're all gone. He's on his third quarterback, Duck Hodges, after Mason Rudolph. I still don't know exactly what's going on there. I mean, for one point, he was playing really well, and all of a sudden, he's making turnovers. That fight clearly changed some perceptions. I don't know if that's that garbage about a racial slur is still hanging over in the locker room. But for whatever reason, he made a switch to his third-string quarterback and held off what was supposed to be the team that was supposed to go to the Super Bowl, you know, the Cleveland Browns. And after, you know, just a few weeks after the big fight that led to all this stuff, the Steelers just hold their composure and hold off the Browns after Baker Mayfield fumbles, gets sacked, throws an interception. I mean, you know, take his commercials off the air for a couple minutes, all right? And let's bring him back down to earth before everybody anoints him the next this, that, or the other. Because if you were to watch, Mike, if you were to watch the game versus the commercials, you really would have a misperception about, you think Baker Mayfield was the best quarterback in the NFL. Look, there he is in another commercial. There he is in another commercial.
Mitch.
And then you watch him play and you say he's still got to work on his game.
Mitch, if you're watching him play, you're thinking to yourself at this point, and obviously it's still early in his career, wait, they took him with the number one pick in a draft that the quarterback for the Ravens went number 32. Yeah. Who do you think they'd rather have now in Cleveland? Excuse me, him or Lamar Jackson? And by the way, that gives us a nice segue. And but before we get to what really was the game of the day in the National Football League, Baltimore and the 49ers, a reminder that we are sponsored here today by Kronos.
Kronos knows that, like many organizations, maintaining a modern workforce of hourly, full and part-time workers can be a challenge. This is especially true for human resources professionals working hard to attract and retain all the best talent. That's why Kronos put HR, payroll, talent, and timekeeping on a single cloud-based platform. It's one specially designed to give HR professionals supporting a blended workforce a whole new level of confidence. With it, they have everything they need to tackle nearly any human resources challenge. And they're empowered to not just find and hire the right people, but to engage, motivate, and reward them every step of the way. You can learn more about Kronos HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them at kronos.com/HR swagger. Kronos, workforce innovation that works.
Mitch, what a good game that was. I mean, bad weather, an old-fashioned football game, and what I came away, I don't know what you came away from because we didn't talk about this before the podcast today. This was a day where the 49ers, who have a great defense, took a lot away from Lamar Jackson, and other than one brilliant strip sack fumble by the 49ers, I thought the kid played a tough, old-fashioned, hard-nosed quarterback game and still was the best player on the field.
Yeah, this wasn't a day where he was going to throw incredible passes
or
off
dazzle.
His back foot.
He wasn't going to dazzle.
Nobody was dazzling. And Jimmy Garoppolo wasn't able to dazzle the way that he does either. I thought we saw a game, Mike, that it's not impossible to imagine that this is going to be a Super Bowl. I really feel that way.
Oh, hell
I mean,
yeah.
they played and they showed that they're more than just their quarterbacks in terms of dimensions.
Yes.
You know, the defenses were very strong. Garoppolo was sieged many times and they played it was basically, you know, a field goal game essentially and the field goals made a big difference. But I think that Lamar Jackson showed that he can lead a team to a win when he doesn't have a highlight reel in it. And you know what? When I watch him, there were a handful of plays, and these weren't touchdown plays. But one of the things that makes him so difficult to defend is when he play fakes, which he's good at. So you're not sure if the running back has the ball for that split second. He is the fastest, I don't even know what the maneuver is called, pivot. The pivot where you go from, you know, like look like you're going backwards, you're dropping backwards after you've handed the ball off, to turning and going forwards. He does that faster than anyone I have ever seen in my life. That's usually when the defense catches up. You know, the quarterback looks like he's handing the ball off. You follow the running back for a second and you go, oh, he doesn't have it. And then you go, you look at the quarterback and the quarterback is making his turn, you know, making his turn. Yep. He's already made his turn. He's already, like, he could beat the running back that he faked handing the ball off to. He could catch up to him. That's a little technique that he has that was good for 6 yards and 9 yards and 12 yards throughout the course of the game. That'll get you a first down. That'll keep drives moving. That might not necessarily make the highlight reel, but is part of what he has that no other quarterback has right now.
And Mitch, he won a game yesterday in which he threw for 105 and nearly had more rushing yards than he did passing yards. But you know what? I never felt like he was having a bad day throwing the ball. No. I think he was being efficient. He was trying not to turn it over, which he didn't. Again, and if you see the fumble play, I forget the name of the defensive back. Somehow he not only wrapped him up, took the ball and ended up with it. The ball never hit the ground. The player did. So it was a brilliant play. But I never felt like Lamar was having this horrible passing day. Short passes, short efficient passes. Again, he runs for a touchdown. He throws for a touchdown. Nothing. You know what that was yesterday, Mitch? That was like a playoff game. That was playoff style football.
That's right.
And
in
by the way,
crappy weather.
Can I ask you another question? You think they got a good kicker in Justin Tucker?
Yeah.
Holy. They didn't care that it was 49 yards, Mitch. They didn't. They weren't even attempting. Once he lost yards on first down, they didn't care.
49 yards in a soppy, half snow, half rain, frozen kind of day, and he buries it. Look, they have beaten Seattle, New England, Houston, the Rams, and the 49ers. They didn't get a schedule like New England got. And they are 10-2. So right now, they're the head of the pack.
Yeah.
Now, things change. The month of December is everything. We're just starting the month of December. And the month of December is so much different than the 3 months that preceded in the NFL. So you won't find on this program between Mike and me, you know, 80 years of sports writing experience, you're not going to hear us say in December, we know what's going to be in January.
No,
we know that this is going to reveal itself. But right now, the Ravens have faced the adversity of a schedule and are sitting at 10-2 in a different way than the New England Patriots are sitting at 10-2. It goes back to what I said before. One team looks like it's having fun and rising, and the other team looks like it's hanging on the edge of a cliff. They both have the same record. So records don't say everything. But the 49ers acquitted themselves well.
And
if somebody thought okay, they're going to be exposed somehow and they're not that great, no. And I can't wait to see the NFC championship. So let's pull this back a little bit now, Mike, and talk about where we are, because there are kind of some strange things going on now.
How about the NFC East?
That's where I was going to begin.
Mitch,
somebody could win the NFC East with a losing record.
By the way, and this is, you know, it's probably going to be the only time his name will come up all year on the podcast. Brian Flores is going to be a great coach in the National Football League, because everybody thought they were going to tank their way to 0-16, and he's got the Dolphins playing. I'm telling you, he's got the Dolphins playing, and that was a big win for them at home yesterday against the Eagles. The Eagles look awful, and the Eagles actually have a much easier schedule than the Cowboys the rest of the way, Mitch. Start right here, the Eagles get the Giants twice.
Yeah, well, at 5-7... the fact that you can still say, you know, they're right in the thick of it,
they got a chance,
tells you everything that you need to know about the NFC East. The Dallas Cowboys continue to just mystify, and their Thanksgiving Day loss just continues to make you wonder. I mean, okay, they've got this great assemblage of talent. When you look at the players that they've got on offense, you know, this is a trio that, that rivals the Aikman and Emmett Smith and the rest of them, you know, with Dak and Elliott and Amari Cooper. They've got a triumvirate there. They've supposedly, you know, had a decent defense. They're 6-6. They're 6-6. They're 3-3 at home. They're just an average team. They've lost two. The Eagles have lost three. The Redskins are the hottest team in the NFC East right now. Okay. The Redskins, who theoretically are not out of it yet. How can that be? So I this is one of those years where you almost want to say, can we just take more teams from the other divisions? Can we take the 49ers, the Seahawks, and the Rams from the West and just leave somebody out from the NFC East? But the NFC is going to be very interesting, Mike. New Orleans is about the only team that's sort of got a lock in their division. We don't know what's going to happen between the 49ers and the Seahawks. They're half a game apart. Green
game
Bay and
tonight.
Minnesota are very
good
close.
Good game tonight, too.
Right.
Good game tonight. Seahawks
Green,
and Vikings.
Green Bay and Minnesota are very close.
But Packers are 9-3. It wasn't fair yesterday. Not only did they get the Giants, but they got Lambeau weather in New Jersey. And so that just didn't seem right to me, because Aaron, talk about come to Papa. Aaron Rodgers looked at the Giants defense and the conditions and said, come to Papa. But yeah, you got the 49ers, you got the Seahawks. Rams finally played a game too late yesterday. The Saints are in a very good position. So are the Packers if they could ever win out. They've got a game coming up with the Vikings in Minnesota that's going to determine the NFC North. In good ways and bad ways, Mitch, the NFC, to me, is a lot more interesting than the AFC right now.
It is. And by the way, if Minnesota should lose that game to Seattle, the LA Rams are not out of the running here.
Not out of it. No, they're not.
For a wild card team. It could be very strange. It could be one of those years where one division sends three teams. But we'll see what's happening there. And meanwhile, over on the, just to wrap up on the AFC side of things, Kansas City, faced down Oakland, who was breathing on their necks a little bit and kind of showed them, okay, not yet.
And Patrick Mahomes reminded us why we were all giddy about Patrick Mahomes one year ago. Again, before we get to our parting shots, a reminder that we are sponsored today by our friends at Keeps. Did you know 2 out of 3 guys will experience some form of male pattern baldness by the time they're 35? The good news, with today's advancements in science, Keeps offers proven treatments that can combat the symptoms of hair loss. If you're ready to take action, a doctor can get the right Keeps plan for you. Keeps has revolutionized the way men are treated for hair loss. Say goodbye to the inconvenient doctor office visits. Now, thanks to Keeps, you can visit a doctor online and get medication delivered to your home. No more waiting rooms and no more pharmacy checkout lines. Get doctor attention and discreet drug delivery, all from the comfort and privacy of your own home. Find out why Keeps has more 5-star reviews than any of its competitors, and nearly 100,000 men trust Keeps for their hair loss prevention medication. Prevention is the key. Keeps treatments really work. They are up to 90% effective at reducing and stopping further hair loss. The sooner you start using Keeps, the more hair you'll save, so act fast. Go to keeps.com/reporters to receive your first month of treatment free. That's KEEPS.com/reporters. It is time for our parting shots, and Mr. Album will lead off today.
Now, parting shots.
There is a definite shift in the world of the NFL, and it has nothing to do with going from offense to defense, from defense to special teams, from abandoning the run for the pass, or selling out to blitz the quarterback. The shift I'm talking about is when your team is done as far as the playoffs are concerned, and you go into the race for the bottom mode. Such is the case here in Detroit and in other cities across the country like Washington, Miami, Cincinnati, etc. There's no point anymore in rooting for wins. In fact, wins start to become the enemy. So you could hear fans in Dolphin Land after their impressive upset of the Eagles yesterday yelling, "What are you doing? That's 3 wins now. What do we need 3 wins for?" And you could hear Washington Redskins fans after yesterday's victory saying, "Winning streak? Now you go on a 2-game winning streak?" Yeah. Even in Cincinnati, where the winless season had given them a sense of confidence, suddenly they beat the Jets, and instead of celebrating, Bengals fans say, "Uh-oh." The race to the bottom is just as fervent, just as passionate, and just as angry as the race to the top. The NFL may not like it, but that's the way the system is set up. And until the draft order no longer depends on worst record, there's a whole other game going on in the forgotten NFL cities of this country. It's spelled L-O-S-E. Please.
Speaking of losing, the New York Knicks lost another game on Sunday. Kind of their thing. It was to the Celtics, and it was at Madison Square Garden, which people still insist on calling, Mitch, the Mecca of basketball, even though it hasn't been anything close to that since, like, dinosaurs roamed the earth. The loss dropped the Knicks' record to 4-16. I pointed this out before, but the Knicks have now won exactly one playoff series since the spring of, wait for it, 2000. It means they're off to a really slow century. They've now been the worst team in the NBA for two decades. They ended up in the lottery last season, and RJ Barrett may turn out to be an NBA star. He's just 19, and you'd say it's too early to tell about him, but it sure wasn't too early to tell with Luka Doncic when he was 19, was it? The Knicks continue to build on false promises, false promise for most of the guys they draft, and as much dysfunction as any team in professional sports. If you're a New Yorker, you know how much it hurts to be a Knicks fan. But despite what the last two NBA commissioners say, this happens to be bad for the business of the league, essentially having no team in the borough of Manhattan. The NBA has gotten LA back in a big way this season. You tell me when you think that will happen with the Knicks. Thanks for joining us today. We have an awful lot of fun doing this. We're so happy we were able to put the band back together. Ryan will be back next week. Go to Spotify, Stitcher, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, wherever you find your podcast. Leave a comment, leave a rating, and continue to download, continue to subscribe, and we'll talk to you in a few days, everybody.